mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, it's Equal Pay Day, symbolizing how far into the new year women must work to earn what men earned in the previous year. It's also the perfect opportunity to highlight the importance of upward economic mobility and giving everyone the chance to move up the ladder. Also this morning, millions of Americans are locked in a constant battle with their waistline, but winning that battle is easier than you think. So says Dr. Neil Barnard, author of The Power Foods Diet. He'll join us to explain. And happening around town, it's a celebration of the magic of the Big Apple. We get a preview of this year's Findlay Silver Blades Ice Classics show. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, March 12, 2024. I hate to mention this. Because I know if you haven't filed yet, this is not what you want to hear. It's only about a month or so until tax deadline day. And I get it. I'm one of those procrastinators, too. I know I shouldn't be, but I've always been like that. I've always been a procrastinator. I was the kid in high school that on the Saturday before the Monday morning when the term paper was due, on Saturday, that's when I'd start. So always been one of those procrastinators. And so I carry forward and I do that to, at tax time too. So if you are like me and you have not yet filed, you should know that we're about a month away now. This I thought was kind of interesting. A new survey of 2,000 adults finds that 1 in 5 Americans cannot define some common tax terms like adjusted gross income or filing status. Who doesn't understand or who doesn't know the definition of filing status? Apparently, 1 in 5 of us. 43% of Americans say they are expecting a refund. And those who do believe that they are going to receive about $2,000, which is down from last year's average of $2,300 in the survey. But I think we're shortchanging ourselves on our estimates. Because last I heard from the IRS, this year's average tax return was running somewhere around $3,000. Your results may vary, of course. 67%, this is the interesting part of the survey here. 67% of those in the poll say if they do get money back, they are determined to use it in a more mature way than in years past. So if you've gotten a tax refund in the past, and you've blown it on a big screen TV or a new stereo or something like that. This year, 67%, two-thirds of Americans are determined to use their tax refund in a more mature way. As many economists and personal finance experts point out, this is really the only time of the year when most Americans get a large windfall. And so there is a great temptation to go out and splurge, but definitely want to be smart with your tax refund. Got about a month to go here until next deadline day. I saw this on the Newswire yesterday. This is really interesting. ChatGPT, artificial intelligence, and that chatbot. There are a number of chatbots out there. ChatGPT is maybe the most famous of them. But did you know that this artificial intelligence machine, the computer, the supercomputer that drives ChatGPT, uses about 17,000 times the amount of electricity that an average American household would use every day? 17,000 times the amount of electricity that the average American household would use on a daily basis. The New Yorker did a piece on this. The chatbot is using 500,000 kilowatt hours to answer 200 million requests on a daily basis. 500,000 kilowatt hours. The average American home uses 29 kilowatt hours in a 24-hour time frame. So think about that. And that's everything. I mean, it's cooking and washing your clothes and cooling and heating your home and so on. We average 29 kilowatt hours a day, and this is using 500,000 kilowatt hours every single day. Every one of the AI servers can already consume as much power as more than a dozen households combined. This is according to data scientist Alex DeVries. This just boggles the mind how much energy it takes to power ChatGPT, the artificial intelligence chatbot. So don't ask it for energy saving tips is basically the if you ask ChatGPT, how do I save energy? It probably comes back with, how do I know? I use 17,000 times more than you do. Let's see. A couple of other interesting items. Among the first things you need to know this morning, Instacart. The grocery and, well, it's mostly grocery delivery service, Instacart. They deliver lots of other things as well, but the delivery service, deliver your orders from the store, Instacart, has now delivered 1 billion orders in their lifetime. In the time that the service has been up and running, 1 billion orders. And in honor of that milestone, they have released some data regarding the purchasing habits of Americans from coast to coast. They did a state-by-state breakdown of what each state orders the most, what each state orders more than any other state. The top states for alcohol orders on Instacart: Arizona, Idaho, Washington State, and Illinois are stocking up on booze. Arizona also leads the nation in orders of ice cubes. Yes, you can order ice on Instagram or on Instacart. But I guess they're living in the desert, so it makes sense they need ice cubes. Colorado residents are more likely to order dry mouth relief products and frozen burritos for delivery. They lead the nation in frozen burrito delivery in Colorado. Nevada orders the most fresh cut roses, styling gels, and contraceptives, which, if you think about it, probably is not a big surprise. Let's see. In New Jersey, they order cheese more than any other state, specifically mozzarella, ricotta, and Romano cheeses in demand in the Garden State of New Jersey. Massachusetts leads the nation in yogurt orders. Weirdos. And Ohio, because I know you wondered, Ohio leads the way in the orders for two things. We order more of these things than any other state: hot dog buns and sloppy Joe sauce. That's kind of interesting. Instacart calls Ohio the sloppiest state. More sloppy Joe sauce and hot dog buns than in any other state. Kind of interesting. And by the way, speaking of food, apparently we have a recipe for the perfect French fries. Researchers, and I'm not sure where this is. Oh, in Greece, actually. Dr. John Lombos, I think is how you pronounce it. I have no idea, actually. Dr. John Lombos, a university researcher in Greece, says that freezing cut potatoes and then frying them multiple times is what gives the French fries that perfect outer crunch. For the best possible, because you don't want them to be too soggy, you don't want them to be too crispy. Freezing your cut potatoes and then frying them multiple times for the best results. Scientists say use russet potatoes cut 7 centimeters long and 1.2 centimeters wide. The rest of the process involves boiling the cut potatoes with 2 tablespoons of vinegar, freezing the potatoes for an hour, and then frying the potatoes twice, once at 325 degrees Fahrenheit, and then again at 360 degrees. The good professor in Greece says the balance between oil absorption and water evaporation determines the crispness, and the high heat promotes a more efficient reaction in the process. So, scientifically, that's how you fry up the perfect French fries. Now you know. And one other food-related story here to make you aware of. This is kind of interesting. Move over cronuts and cruffins. You know, when... And these were like all the rage. Croissants crossed with donuts. Cronuts, right? Same thing with muffins and croissants. Cruffins. A new croissant mashup has taken over. It is the Crookie, invented by one Stéphane Louvard in Paris. It is a cross between a chocolate chip cookie and a croissant. And it is made by splitting croissants in half and adding chocolate chip cookie dough in the middle. Whoa! The Crookie. Mr. Louvard had modest sales of about 100 of these per day until a TikToker broadcasted the Crookie to his 1.3 million followers. And Monsieur Louvard says his bakers now produce at least 1,500 of them every day. So this is the latest big thing that everybody is raging about. The Crookie. Cross between a croissant and a chocolate chip cookie. I have to say, I am more intrigued by that than the cronut. Again, your mileage may vary. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny skies today, high in the mid-60s, partly cloudy tonight, low around 50. The executive director of the Red Cross North Central Ohio chapter, which serves Hancock, Putnam, and other counties, has received the organization's life-saving award for saving his wife's life. The Red Cross says the couple was enjoying dinner at a restaurant in Findlay when Todd James's wife, Kendra, began to choke. Todd performed back blows and abdominal thrusts to dislodge the food his wife was choking on, techniques taught in Red Cross first aid CPR AED courses. For his life-saving action, James has received the Red Cross Certificate of Merit, the highest award given by the Red Cross to individuals who save or sustain a life using skills learned in a Red Cross course. Get more in the story on our website. The Ohio Senate passed a bill in December to set up a system for recreational marijuana to be sold in Ohio, but the House still has not acted on it.
Governor has urged House lawmakers to pass House Bill 86. This would allow recreational marijuana to be sold and increase the tax rate to 15%. Kiera Lake in Columbus.
Hancock Public Health has been awarded a Drive to Succeed grant from the Ohio Department of Traffic Safety. The grant aims to expand access to teen driver training to low-income populations by providing funding for localized scholarship programs. So if you know a teen who is getting ready to drive, the program could allow them to take driver's ed classes for free. Get more information on the program in this story on our website. Cleveland will host the NCAA Women's Final Four in April.
The Greater Cleveland Sports Commission expects large crowds for the Final Four, which starts on April 5th. 2024 NCAA Women's Final Four Executive Director Monica Gustin says the economic impact has surged since they were awarded the games 6 years ago.
We estimated in 2018, when we were awarded, $22 million of economic impact for Northeast Ohio. What we saw as indication last year in Dallas, it's going to be much more than that.
I'm Neil Fisher.
Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So we get to the cover story this morning, as we were mentioning a little bit earlier. Today is known as Equal Pay Day. It represents the point into the new year in which women have to work in order to equal what the average man made in the previous year. It was, oh, my goodness, all the way to March. Keep in mind, a few years ago, the Equal Pay Day was actually in April. So we've made progress. The gap has closed in recent years, but it's plain to see that there is still more work to be done. It's all about upward economic mobility, which is really what we all want for each successive generation, right? For young women and men. of all income levels to be better off than the generation that came before. I mean, that's really what we're talking about here, upward economic mobility. But in reality, this upward economic mobility is actually on the decline. 90% of children who were born in the 1940s would grow up to earn more than their parents did. However, just 50% of children born in the 1980s can make that same claim. And with that in mind, we are joined this morning by Lynn Overman. She is Executive Director at the Beck Center for Social Impact and Innovation at Georgetown University. Much of the work that they are doing in this area is made possible through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And Lynn, that's just one statistic. You talk about the children born in the 1940s, 90% of them will grow up to earn more than their parents. 50% of children born in the 80s will do so. Just one statistic that demonstrates this problem, and it's not an anomaly. I mean, you have great body of research which proves unequivocally that we are moving in the wrong direction on this front.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. Honestly, one of the main things that we do here at the Beck Center for Social Impact is work with existing government programs that are intended to provide low-income workers and families with support to provide the stability they need to enable their kids to have that upward mobility that we're all seeking. And honestly, one of the paths that we take is to help government be smarter about using online tools such as online or mobile applications or data sharing to make it a lot easier for these eligible families to access these benefits. And the reason that we focus on this digital component of it is if we could just deliver even the existing government programs to every individual or family in Ohio who is eligible for them, we could lift more than 500,000 children out of poverty. And that would be a 44% drop in the child poverty rate across the state. And that wouldn't be limited just to children. The total poverty rate across the state could drop up to an estimated 28%. Or 1.5 million people. And there is ample research that demonstrates that when people have things like stable housing, access to nutritious food, and access to healthcare and health insurance, that does give them a baseline for their children to be able to thrive later in life.
Now, obviously, you know, we live in a digital age, and you talk about using these digital tools, apps, and so on to reach out to those who can benefit from these resources. Talk a little bit about, you know, how that helps better support these communities. I guess I'm wondering, how big of a breakthrough is this, being able to have these digital tools to help you do that?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to give you a couple of examples. I will start with the statistics that honestly shock even me, even though I've been in this field for a while.
Yeah.
Which is that right now, only 2% of government forms can be completed online.
Wow.
And I'm guessing, Chris, that your audience, anyone listening right now, probably has a long and painful story about having to fill out a confusing paper application and wondering why the government hasn't caught up with the private sector, where we can go online and order all of our groceries in under 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So one of the approaches that we take at the Beck Center as we're working with government partners is to help them digitize forms and use data sharing. And I'll give you an example. In Michigan, when they made their benefits application accessible online, they made it possible for an applicant to complete an application for 4 different support programs in about 20 minutes. That's the fastest in the country, and we know states like Ohio can do the same.
Is this limited to programs at the state level, the federal and state level, or can you draw down all the way to the community level on this, local organizations, local leaders?
So there are actually a number of benefits that are delivered locally, and we see the same challenge in local governments being able to move their applications and supports online. And we do have a number of programs that support local governments as well. The other thing that we have seen is that we know, even though a lot of folks are very savvy using things like the internet or mobile phones, we do know that there's an entire population of folks, particularly seniors, who can really benefit from these programs as well, that may go to community-based centers for help navigating these systems. And so even though the individuals themselves may not be savvy enough to use the online forms, those digitized forms at the community level can really help a lot of nonprofit or government organizations who are trying to help highly vulnerable folks access these systems do so more efficiently themselves.
Now, I'm sure that the excuse that you hear all the time for the reasons why these programs haven't updated to the 21st century way of doing things is the cost. And I'm assuming that that's where the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation comes in and their investment in this effort.
Yes. Well, you know, I would argue, actually, and I, to be clear, purchasing and deploying technology is a significant challenge for government partners. That mm-hmm. is another area where we provide help. Part of the problem is that the marketplace is not geared towards delivering government technology effectively, and the cost can be quite high. But I would also say the cost of inaction is quite high. So, for example, as I mentioned before, not having forms digital, it actually costs $38 billion nationally for the government just to administer paper forms.
Hmm.
So moving to a digital approach would save money as well as creating efficiencies. And really for us, I think the Gates Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's investment overall in this portfolio to increase economic mobility, $100 million, we think is going to make a significant dent in helping communities like yours across the country really tackle this problem of economic mobility and get us so that any family who is raising a child can be confident that they're going to be able to do better than their parents. And I will say specifically for us at the Beck Center, the Gates Foundation investment in our center has allowed our two programs, the Digital Benefits Network and the Digital Services Network, to reach more than 3,000 government practitioners across the country to help them undertake this kinds of digital transformation that we know will make a difference.
So for anyone who may be hearing us talk about this and is in a position to help move this forward within their organization or perhaps in a government agency in some capacity or what have you, how do folks reach out and engage with you in this work?
Yes, we would encourage anyone listening to contact their local government or their state government or any community organizations that are interested in this work. And you can easily find us on the web. And I will give you our website, which is Beck Center, B-E-E-C-K, center.georgetown.edu. And we have a range of different programs that folks can look into. And obviously, we welcome folks reaching out to us. We love talking to new partners and have a range of tools and resources available to support people.
And again, just to underscore, obviously, from Georgetown University, but you are assisting entities all over the country. It is not limited to one area of the country or another.
So absolutely
this is
not
nationwide.
No, we know that there is work to be done everywhere, and we are eager to engage with anyone who is looking to help their communities increase economic mobility.
Again, Lynn Overman is Executive Director at the Beck Center for Social Impact and Innovation at Georgetown University. Mention again the website where folks can learn more.
Great. Thank you so much. It's Beck Center, B-E-E-C-K, center.georgetown.edu.
Lynn, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been great chatting with you.
Well, for millions of Americans, the Battle of the Bulge is real. And especially with spring right around the corner now, everyone wants to look their best during this season where we show more skin. So Dr. Neil Barnard is an experienced researcher into scientific issues of nutrition and health at George Washington University School of Medicine. He is also president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And his new book is The Power Foods Diet, the breakthrough plan that traps, tames, and burns calories for easy and permanent weight loss. Dr. Barnard, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
It's great to be with you today.
So there are thousands. I'll start with the obvious question. there are thousands of books on this subject, thousands more weight loss plans. What makes yours unique?
You know, it's true. Overweight is a huge issue, and so many people want to lose weight, and there are all kinds of folks out there trying to sell this and that idea. And as a doctor and a clinical researcher, I've been concerned about that. And so we have been really trying to separate what actually does work, what works over the long run, what helps you keep it off, and also, perhaps more importantly, what makes it doable, sustainable, and if I can even use the word fun. That's the thing, because otherwise it's not going to work. And
yeah.
What we have found, which has helped us out enormously, is that there are certain foods that actually cause weight loss. And what I mean by that is it started really in 2015. Harvard researchers found, in tracking hundreds of thousands of people, that if they ate more of certain foods, they would lose more weight. And we know what those foods are, and we know why they work. And other research has nailed this down in more detail. And some of them are spices, things like cinnamon or ginger or hot peppers. And some of them are certain particular foods that you could add. So the Power Foods Diet says, if these foods stimulate your metabolism or they tame your appetite, mm-hmm. let's put them into your breakfast. Let's put them into your lunch and dinner. And then you lose weight without doing all these punishing things that other books tell you to do. You're not counting calories. You're not avoiding carbohydrate. You're not even ramping up your exercise unless you want to.
Mm-hmm.
And the weight loss becomes simple and automatic.
Yeah, that was one of the things that really caught my eye here, is that you say that there are certain foods that actually cause weight loss. Beyond that, you also say that the reverse is true, that there are some foods we think are good for us, but can actually be harmful or at least counterproductive when it comes to weight loss, weight control, weight management, that kind of thing.
You said it. That's absolutely the case. In the first category of good things, one of the most surprising was cinnamon, which I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Cinnamon is a spice. Everybody likes it on your oatmeal or on your toast. It's great. But researchers discovered that there is a receptor in your digestive tract where a natural compound in the cinnamon attaches to this receptor. So you have some cinnamon toast. The cinnamon, it's an aldehyde. It attaches to that receptor in your digestive tract, and it triggers the release of a gentle amount of adrenaline, so your metabolism rises. And researchers have put this to the test, and they found in a group of people randomly assigned to consume cinnamon or a placebo that the cinnamon group lost about 7.5 pounds over 16 weeks or so, and that was the only change they made. Now, the amount that they used was probably more than most people would do. It was about a teaspoon per day, but you can put it in different things. You can even put it in tea or on oatmeal or anything, or you can use some cinnamon, but you can also use ginger, which has similar effects, or you can use other foods and build them into your routine, so that overall the net effect is we're probably, with just foods alone, able to knock out about 500 calories a day, and the weight loss becomes really, really easy.
So we mentioned, you know, certain foods that contribute positively to weight loss, encouraging weight loss. As we mentioned in the book, you talk about some that have a negative effect. What about everything else in between?
Okay. Maybe if we go back to Harvard, we can kind of get a sense of it. Harvard identified a group of foods that if you ate them, you lost more weight. And let me give you the top six. Number six is the bean group, beans, peas, lentils. No surprise, they're the highest fiber foods there are, and fiber it fills you up with almost no calories.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you're full, you haven't really eaten a lot of calories. Number six is the bean group. Number five is the melon group. So, cantaloupe, watermelon. No surprise, they're watery, they're high in fiber.
Mm-hmm.
Number four was citrus fruits, like oranges or grapefruit or even orange juice. Number three is green vegetables, and that could be spinach or even your salad, romaine salad. Number two is cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. And the number one, the winner of all, was this humble little food, the blueberry, and all of its cousins. The people who ate the most of those lost the most weight. So in the Power Foods Diet, one of the first pictures that you'll see is French toast topped with cinnamon, with blueberry syrup over the top. So we're combining the effects of the cinnamon, effects of the blueberries, and then we're taking out some of the bad stuff that might otherwise make French toast fattening.
Mm. So, you know, the other challenge that we have in this never-ending battle to control our waistline is a lack of patience. We're like a week and a half away from the arrival of spring, and we want this right now. But realistically, how long should we expect something like the Power Foods diet? How long should we expect that to take hold and start yielding results?
Well, the weight loss starts right away with the very first meal you consume. But I think what you said is so important. I don't think people should try to lose 15 pounds in a week. We didn't gain it that fast, and you don't want to lose it that fast.
Yeah.
You don't want to push your body too hard. That will end up having a rebound effect. But people can lose weight. And the reason I say it starts with the very first meal is we measure that. In our research studies, we will measure your calorie burning speed, which we do with, you come into our laboratory, you sit on a chair in the exam room, and then we put on a mask, which is measuring how much oxygen your body is using and how much carbon dioxide you're putting out. And then we'll feed you a meal. And you can see the metabolism ramping up, and it goes higher for about 3, 4, 5 hours after that meal. It starts as soon as you start eating these foods. But it builds. It gets better. We did one of these studies, and we found you could get a good burn right on day one. But then 14 weeks later, we brought everybody back, and we found that their burn with the very same test meal was about 15% higher than it had been, meaning that their bodies are readjusting, and they're getting a better calorie burn day after day after day after day. So the effects build up over time.
Yeah. I can hear some folks say this. You make it sound like it's all too easy, and this is something that we all know is not easy. But is that really the case? I mean, are you arguing that the only reason that losing weight isn't easy is because we've been doing it all wrong?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, and it's understandable people would say this. People think, okay, I'm overweight, I'm sick of this, I'm going to not eat anything. Or yeah. I'm going to go, instead of an 1,800 calorie normal diet, I'm going to only eat 1,200 calories or 800 or something like that.
Yeah, which again
and
is exactly, again, just to interject, that's exactly what you're not suggesting in this book.
Precisely, because if you do that, you're going to be hungry, you're going to be miserable, and by Wednesday, you are ready to eat the sofa.
right.
Or And so that is hard. Or if you say, well, you've got to go to the gym, and going to the gym is great. I mean, I exercise all the time. I think it's super. But if you tell a person you've got to slog and sweat for an hour every day, a couple of days, that is hard. And people in our research studies don't change their exercise at all. Exercise is good, but we're isolating the effect of food alone. You don't need the exercise part necessarily. Or people go low carb. And it's hard because you think, well, I can never eat another potato, no more bread, no more pasta, no more rice, no more fruit. And that is hard, and that's wrong. What we are doing with this, it is easy. How easy would it be for you tomorrow to, instead of making pancakes the old-fashioned way, where we slather it with butter, to make some French toast the way I'm going to describe, put it with blueberry syrup, is that hard? Or take my Southwest chili. It's fabulous. I've got a carrot cake recipe. They're similar to the ones you do now, but we're plugging in the power ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And the most wonderful thing about it is you can share it. So your reluctant spouse or your kids who don't listen to you, well, they'll share your dessert.
Yeah.
And they'll get the benefit too.
The book is The Power Foods Diet. And again, as you alluded to, includes a lot of recipes so that you can actually put this into practice. The breakthrough plan that traps, tames, and burns calories for easy and permanent weight loss. Dr. Neil Barnard is the author. And do you have a website where folks can learn more about the book?
Sure. Our website we're at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM.org is the website. And if a person goes to Amazon now, the book is coming out March 26th, but it's on pre-order, so you can get it delivered the very first day that the bookstores have it. So the Power Foods Diet's available everywhere.
Dr. Barnard, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
It's great speaking with you today.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
This is a crazy story, and you have to wonder how this happened. Apparently, police say a 12-year-old boy was found locked inside of a Columbus-area Target store on Monday morning as they opened the store on East Broad Street near Reynoldsburg is where this happened. Police say the boy's parents had filed a missing persons report on Sunday, and then on Monday morning, they discovered he had been locked inside the Target store when it closed. I mean, so many crazy things on this. First of all, how in the world did the employees miss this? I mean, I understand it's a big store. You know, they're big box stores, and so I suppose the possibility exists that someone could be, especially a 12-year-old boy, could be somewhere in the store and not detected. But it's just crazy, the idea that, how do the parents not, how do they lose track of your 12-year-old in the store and not realize that's where he was? They filed a missing persons report. And here's the other thing. Don't they have, like, emergency exits that, you know, in the stores? And you go in these big box stores, any big box store, and you see emergency exit. You know, you push here and alarm sounds, but you can get outside in the event. And they're there for, you know, in case of a fire or something along those lines. But, and again, I guess he's 12 years old. Maybe he didn't think about this, but that would be the first thing that I would look for, is find me an emergency exit where I can get out of the store. An investigation into how the boy went undetected during the store's closing is ongoing, but just all kinds of question marks about this story. That is crazy. Outside of Columbus in Reynoldsburg. Some of the other items from today's broken news report, the odd and unusual side of the headline: a Nebraska man is under arrest, accused of leading police on a high-speed chase with four teenagers in the car. Douglas County deputies and Omaha police officers say Steve Miller was driving in excess of 130 miles an hour at some points during the chase. The sheriff's office say the deputies saw a truck spinning in the middle of an intersection. And that's when the chase ensued. After he was arrested, Mr. Miller told officers he thought it would be cool for the teens to have that experience of a police chase. That's why he did it. He just thought it would be cool for the teenagers to have that experience. He's being held on various charges. And even more charges may be pending. So, not sure how the teenagers felt about that, as it turned out. Cool! Speaking of teenagers and automobiles, saw this story out of West Omaha, Nebraska, where a teenage driver who was unidentified in the report, so I don't know a name, this is a minor, don't know his exact age, but apparently he was pulled over for driving his Kia Sorento 117 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone. The driver told police he was rushing to see his girlfriend during a work break. Wow. Wow. Rushing to see his girlfriend during a work break. The teenager was cited for suspicion of speeding, and not having a valid registration for his vehicle. Faces multiple fines and possible suspension of his license. This is taking speed dating to an entirely new level, right? Ba-dum-bum. Speed dating, get it? 117 miles an hour, rushing to see his girlfriend. Okay. Well, some are better than others. Let me move on here. A humanoid robot in Saudi Arabia. Was captured on video apparently fondling a female reporter. And they built this humanoid robot called Muhammad the Humanoid Robot. Made his debut at a robotics conference last week. Muhammad was built by the Saudi robotics company QSS and speaks Arabic and English and can actually hold conversations with human beings. During the presentation, Muhammad the humanoid robot appears to grab the backside of reporter Rawa Qasem. She gives the robot a stern glare and raises her palm before continuing. Users have accused the robot of touching the woman inappropriately. The company says it has reviewed the video footage that was posted on social media and will henceforth prevent anyone from getting too close to the robot within its areas of movement. until they can figure it out and reprogram the robot. They made it a little too realistic, this male robot. Machines are getting smarter and smarter all the time. And finally, in the broken news this morning, ladies, you'll love this. A Japanese telecommunications company, in an effort to make its predominantly male workforce more supportive of their female peers, has given those men the chance to experience what it's like to have menstrual pain. According to a news report, they have this device developed by researchers at Nara Women's University and a startup called Osaka Heat Cool. This device sends electric signals via pads placed in the lower abdominal region to simulate the cramping sensation experienced by women during that time of month. So they use this on the guys to give them the experience of what this is like. As expected, the men came away with a new appreciation for what women go through during their cycle. One 26-year-old employee said, "It hurts so much I can't stand straight." According to the news report, about 44% of women in Japan don't take any time off during their period, even when they are in serious pain, according to this survey. And so the company decided they were going to give guys a taste of what their coworkers were going through. At least 5,000 people participated in the survey that was conducted in multiple countries over the course of the past year. In terms of how much time women take off during that time of the month and telecommunications. It hurts so bad, I can't stand up. we're just wimps. We couldn't deal with it. We couldn't deal with it. And you're a lot of women in this country saying, we got to get this experiment here right now in this country. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Do you know an exceptional teacher who's made a positive impact in your life or the life of a student? It's time to shine a bright spotlight on these educational heroes with the Findlay Rotary Golden Apple Awards. Nominate your favorite teacher from Findlay or Hancock County online at findlayrotary.org before April 5th. Nominate an outstanding educator for the Golden Apple Awards. Make a difference. Honor a teacher by visiting findlayrotary.org today. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The Big Ten men's basketball tournament gets underway tomorrow, and the Buckeyes will play their first game on Thursday. They get a first round bye, even though seeded number 10. They get a first round bye. We'll play Iowa. Buckeyes hopefully will make a good run because they need it in order to make the NCAA tournament. Do they have to win? I mean, obviously, if they win the Big Ten tournament, then they would be in the big dance. But there is an outside shot that they, with a really good, strong showing, that they, you know, could sneak into the field as an at-large. It would be, it's a big lift. It's a long shot, but there is a possibility. Basketball lovers, this is why we talk about this. March Madness right around the corner. Basketball lovers will spend about 36 hours this year watching March Madness games. This is according to a new survey from Tipico Sportsbook. Asked 2,000 fans age 21 and over, 36 hours on average is the amount of time we're going to spend watching the games. Fans will also spend about 5 hours watching online content and another 5 hours reviewing game highlights. 26% in the survey have admitted to skipping work so that they don't miss out on any of the game action. Not just watching during work, but actually skipping work so they don't miss any of the game action. 76% of those in the poll have a favorite team they are rooting for, but the average fan begins to give up if their team is down by 19 points in the second half. That is the threshold when we give up all hope of our favorite team advancing, if you're down by 19 in the second half. So, happening around town, it's a celebration of the magic of the Big Apple. This year's Findlay Silver Blades Ice Classic show, and joining us with a preview is Kelly Coulter. You are not the parent of the entire cast of Ice Classics, but pretty close. You got four in this in the show, I'm told. So when they said we need someone to come in and talk about it, I guess you're the natural person since you've got so many in
for
the
sure, definitely.
that must be quite a how long have they been preparing for this?
For the show?
Yeah, so how long basically I'm asking, how long has your household been absolutely crazy getting ready for Ice Classics?
It's always crazy.
Aside from the normal.
It's not too bad now, but we're ramping up right now. So yeah. extra practices, lots of hard work, and lots of cold feet. So
I'll bet. So tell us about the show. As we mentioned, the theme is New York this year.
I love New York. So it's our 48th annual show. We're the only figure skating club in Northwest Ohio that has an annual show. And we're just celebrating all things New York this year, everything from Rockefeller Center to, I can't think right now, Broadway, taxis, pizza, food, all the things, things New York,
everything
that makes it great.
Makes New York special. And tell us about the show and how you incorporate that then into all of this.
Into all of this?
Yeah.
We just find some great music that brings out the spirit of New York and dress our kids up super cute with some great costumes and come up with some nice choreography for them and think of like what reminds us of New York, you know, all the great music and tributes that we can do.
How many kids are there involved in the Ice Classic? I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot with an exact number.
No, you're fine. But I mean, it's
68
children, or 67 children and a mom. and a mom. We're super excited.
Very cool.
Kids are excited, so yeah.
And you mentioned, I mean, this is been planning for it and preparing for it for long time.
You don't
throw it together in just a couple of weeks.
No, we start planning as soon as the show's wrapping up. We're coming up with ideas for the next year. What our theme is, you know, what routines we're going to have, and then after the new year is when we really start working on our programs.
And the performers range in ages from what to what? I mean, you mentioned there's a mom, but I mean in terms of the youth.
3 or 4 to 18.
Okay.
And then so an undisclosed age.
All the way through, this starts with the youngest kids. I don't know if folks have not seen Ice Classics before, they may not realize
you know, that you get them started very, very young.
You can
here.
Walk, you can skate.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
And how long have your kids been involved in this?
I think this might be our fifth year. My youngest one was the first one to start, and then little by little they all trickled
really?
In and joined.
So yes. Kind of the opposite way
yes.
Of getting involved. What is it about this that draws the kids into the...
It's honestly fun for the whole family. Mm-hmm. It is. And Silver Blades is like a family itself. We all kind of look out for each other, and so it makes it, you know, a good environment for the kids, a great environment for the parents, and they just have fun when they're out there, whether it's a like a class and they're practicing and learning new things, or they're learning a new routine, or, you know, and the kids love the show. They love putting on the show. They love, you know, skating for an audience, mm-hmm. and, you know, even backstage the kids have fun and play yeah. games and
yeah.
are excited.
You mentioned that this is the highlight event of the year. I mean, this is, you know, the
yes.
the big culmination of the year. But again, a year round club, and I mean, you're out there on the ice, you know, 12 yeah. months out of the year. Right?
Well, our season, I'm trying to think. Our season runs from October until April.
Okay.
And then our off season, we do offer some classes and
okay.
off ice time. But I mean, pretty much, yeah. I mean,
yeah. It's like any other activity. It's a big commitment.
Yeah. People
here.
Think I'm kind of silly when it's in the middle of summer and I'm telling them we're all getting dressed up and we're going to the rink.
We're going skating. Yeah. So give us the details on Ice Classics this year.
On Ice Classics this year. So we're celebrating all things New York. I know my daughter, one of my daughters, she's in Joe's Pizza. Mm-hmm. I have another one who's performing in Rockefeller Center.
Okay.
So we try to come up with music that reminds us of that. So it's a good time. I try not to watch too much because I like to be surprised during the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Tickets are available now. It's actually coming up the 22nd, 23rd, 24th.
Yes.
So
tickets
here in a couple of weeks.
Are available at FinleySilverBlades.com through our ticketing hub. You can find us on Facebook. We've got links everywhere for that as well. We have general admissions on the bleachers. So if you want to save your back, get those reserved seats. And
okay. Obviously, you wouldn't be able to do this without the support of number of sponsors who
yes,
make it.
Yes.
We want to make sure that we get the plugs in.
In particular, National Beef and Simona PMC and Visit Finley has been great working with us and supporting us.
And I'm sure that this happens every year. Families will come, kids will come, they'll see how much fun it is out on the ice and will be inspired to join or want to get involved.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
How do parents learn more about Silver Blades in general?
Visit our Facebook page or our website. All the information's there. Send us a message, an email, and we'll get back to you.
And I know that there have been over the years, because we've talked to some of the skaters who have participated in this, who will go on. This is a lifelong thing. I mean, this is something that you get into as a kid and just, you know, continue.
Oh, definitely. I'm an alumni of Silver Blades. I skated for years, and Saturday, actually, we're celebrating our alumni. So if you've ever been a part of the club, come out and, you know, support our newer skaters.
Terrific. So, again, tickets are available now. Ice Classics coming up Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And we've got a link on our webpage for more information about it. And Kelly Coulter, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Good
I appreciate
stuff.
It.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at goodmornings.net. That's our little corner of the World Wide Web. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we continue our countdown to the eclipse with a look at what will happen on April 8th, I mean, other than the obvious, and what's the likelihood we'll actually be able to see any of it. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.